This is a class on the literature of the American South. You're going to encounter some archaic thoughts, coarse language, but we're all adults here, and I think we can understand it within the context in which it's written.
Well, I just find that word really offensive.
With all due respect, Brittany, I got over it. I'm pretty sure you can too.
Well, I don't see why.
Right.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Get Your Film Fix podcast. I am Lee Carlo. I am joined by
Chapin Hemingway
and
when did they all become so goddamn delicate?
This wasn't an isolated.
Doesn't know what to do. Never done it this way. I was hoping to do it like boom, 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 with like, you know, oh, it'd be amazing.
Fist.
Jeremy Fisk.
Jeremy.
He's panicked.
Jeremy Weston Fisk. Oh, I don't want to say my whole name. Oh, erase.
Guys, we are 23 days away from the 9th annual Fixie Awards. I am so excited. It's crunch time. We're down to our last few podcasts before the show.
And makes me sad.
This week, we are going to be discussing a film that has 5 Academy Award nominations, was awarded Movie of the Year by AFI, and has really created a lot of buzz on the awards circuit. So we thought that it was going to be important to see if it was going to create buzz on the Fixie circuit.
Well, I was going to say this is a film that we need to hear more white people's opinion about. So
agreed.
That's why we jumped right on it.
That's ultimately what I think we're going to be doing here. So you're welcome. This is written and directed by Cord Jefferson, adapted from a Percival Everett book called Erasure. And it follows a character named Thelonious Ellison, affectionately known to his friends and family as Monk, played by Jeffrey Wright. He is a novelist who has had several books published, but is struggling to find an audience for his most recent one, due in large part due to his refusal to cater to a broad audience, in particular, an audience that is looking for stereotypical black stories and black characters. Then, as somewhat of a rebellious act, he decides to write a parody of that exact type of novel, and to his surprise, but to no one else's, seemingly, it is a huge, huge hit. And he has to kind of navigate that landscape throughout that. Meanwhile, the second half of this movie, or the other half of this movie, rather, is a family drama. He returns back to Boston, or Greater Boston, the South Shore, where his mother, who is ailing, lives, and his sister, who very early on in the movie passes away, and his brother, just got a phone call, guys. I'll take this. Give me a sec.
Jesus Christ.
His brother, played by Sterling K. Brown,
doesn't have their phone on vibrate anymore.
Returns. I can't hear if it's on vibrate. His brother, played by Sterling K. Brown, returns to assist with the funeral of their sister and the and their ailing mother. So we have kind of two different styles of storytelling here. And while watching this, and particularly as I was planning for this discussion, I was reminded of our podcast on Don't Look Up, guys. In particular,
another Boston-based movie.
And that's why. In particularly, a comment that Chapin made to me about it, or rather about my opinion of it, suggesting that maybe that type of movie is just not something that I like. And I think at the time we were kind of talking about the satirical aspects of Don't Look Up. Now, satire has, I think, a pretty blurry definition. And I think your definition of it can factor into your enjoyment of it in certain cases. But for me, I think it's almost more important about what is not there than what is there. And I think it can't be too broad. It can't be too on the nose. It needs, it, typically I like it to be funny. It doesn't need to be. But without giving my opinion of this movie away too much, I really struggled with the satirical aspects of this movie for those reasons. I found it very broad. I found it very on the nose. And while funny, I thought that the jokes were not particularly clever and weren't really saying anything that was important for us to hear that we just don't already know. And I think for a satire to really work, it needs to make you think a little harder. So I'm curious, is this a case of me just not liking this type of movie? Or did you guys also have an issue with the satire here?
I'll put it this way to you. I see what you're saying, Lee. Like, I understand it. And I don't entirely know how I felt. I was torn. This definitely, for me, is a movie where there are aspects of it that I really enjoyed structurally. I liked a lot of what it was trying to say. It wasn't subtle, like you said about it. But I also found the writing both clever and really basic at the same time. Like
I said, elementary.
Yeah. Well, I'm even talking about the dialogue. There was some dialogue early on that I was like, really? Like this is in the, like it just sounded like, I mean, if they didn't have the actors they had, it really would have fallen flat. But I thought some of the dialogue was just too, like, way too exposition. But by the end of the movie, I'm like, I kind of like that. So I don't know. I'm certainly torn. I can't defend it enough to say that you're wrong because I understand where you're coming from. And I kind of agree with you, but I also, there is a part of it that I fell for enough that by the end of the movie, I would definitely put it on my thumbs up list. If I had to pick between a thumbs up and a thumbs down. I think the concepts of it were interesting enough that it kept you engaged as a viewer.
So there were moments, I don't even know if I want to go as far as scenes, aside from maybe a couple, that I thought were really quite enjoyable and I liked what it was doing. But I will go a step further. I thought the writing in this was like pretty bad and like pretty elementary and like what you're saying with the dialogue, that's what the most obvious, like some of the lines of dialogue were like so painfully like first draft and it was almost cringeworthy. But then additionally, I thought this extends to the direction of the film. I thought this movie had no identity tonally. It had no idea, like, what kind of movie it wanted to be. Does it want to be this, like, heartfelt family drama? Does it want to be this funny, on-the-nose, outrageous satire? And I'm like, I guess it wants to be both, but those two things didn't work in conjunction with each other at all. And then, I don't know, I'm getting into, like, all my thoughts here before Chapin gets back, but you said that without the acting, the dialogue would have been a real problem. I didn't think the acting was very good.
I don't think it was bad,
but I don't think it was very good.
I kind of disagree there. I mean, I thought Jeffrey Wright was really good.
Really? I
really liked him. And he was, I think he's what saved it for me, to be honest. I think
that's,
he's
interesting.
The heart and soul of this movie. And it made all those things you're saying, which again, I cannot disagree with you. I think it made him work, but there's
also, this is a satire. I think it's more what you were saying. It's an amalgam of all these things. It's doing a lot. It's trying to do a lot. And I don't think it's a satire at all. In fact, like the satirical moments are sort of few and far between, all that stuff. I feel like it's satirical when we see the characters sort of come alive as he's writing the book, which never come back to. It's just one scene, you know?
Yeah.
Which goes to Lee's point about the tone of the movie, because you're right, Chapin. They all of a sudden decide to do that. And the only other time you see something even remotely like that is towards the end of the movie where he's describing different endings to the very movie we're watching.
Which I liked. I liked those elements, and at the end, I said, you know, I kind of wish this was the rest of the movie. Like,
I liked the end, the final scene. Yeah. That was actually really good.
I thought it was a little funny. But no, I totally agree with you. Like, you know, there's a lot of... I took notes for like the first time in a while.
And as a result, he like can't get the computer working.
Yeah. Well, he only has so much space brain. So I said, the notes took up the...
Okay, well, shut the fuck up for a second. A lot at play in this film, and nothing is given enough time or energy to explore on any meaningful level. You know, like there's the family element and all of that. Let's just take the family element for once. It's all played out so conveniently. Like the sister dies, the mom starts having problems, and they got to put her in the home. And then at the same time, Sterling K. Brown's character is having some troubles. It's all. And like, that would be fine if like not every other piece of this movie was just like constructed to sort of aid in whatever narrative they wanted to go with this film. And like, they're like, despite a film being a lot about money, this movie doesn't seem to understand money at all. Like, they're broke, but they have a lifelong
yeah,
like cleaning woman or maid.
They do say at one point they'll fire him, like they should fire her, and they're like, oh, she's family.
Yeah, well, okay.
But that's what I mean about sloppy writing, right? Like, it's just, reads like a first draft.
He decides in one scene to write this book, and you see him struggle with it for, I don't know, 5 minutes, and you see the characters come alive for 5 minutes, and then it's suddenly a finished book. You get no sense of, like, what it was like to write this, or, like, the pain of writing it, or, like, what he put into it, and suddenly it's this bestseller, and, like, they're really into it, and they're printing a bunch of copies, and, like, we don't really know what the book is about. We get like a little bit of a preview when we see these characters come alive in the study of the old family house. But like, it didn't, I mean, and maybe this is revealing too much. It didn't really, I mean, there's these ridiculous moments where the guy shoots his father and all these kind of convenient things happen. But I kind of thought of this movie, like all these, there's just these like conveniences that shape this narrative. Yeah, I just I really don't understand why this movie is getting so much love. I really don't. I agree with you.
I appreciate you. I agree with you,
Lee.
I did not like it.
I didn't think the acting was good. Nothing stood out to me about the acting. Like Jeffrey Wright, who I usually love, I thought he was good. I mean, he brings his sort of quality. I don't think this is like a career defining, you know. This is his first Oscar. He should have been nominated for Peebles Hernandez in Shaft, but wasn't. Sterling K. Brown, didn't have much of a character. Like, I don't really understand what was happening with his character.
So I don't blame the actors either. I think there is no material here for these actors. Like, Sterling K. Brown is getting so much love for this performance, and it's like, oh, it's such a departure for him. And I'm like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on Sterling K. Brown, okay? Like, he's been on This Is Us and The People versus O.J. Simpson, all right? Like, let's not
I think he's a great actor.
I like him, actually, he's in Waves, which is a movie you guys know that I absolutely
really
love.
Good. Oh,
Waves,
I like
that movie a lot.
But this is not an actor that's had like a 30-year career without recognition that suddenly is like got the role of a lifetime. Like, it's actually like a pretty decent effort of a performance in a really poorly and thin one-dimensional character that like is supposed to be like, I don't know, like breaking stereotypes or something.
But is he
most stereotypical like black gay guy ever.
And he's got a drug issue that's like never addressed and never talked about. Like, he is kind of like, he's got these like young studs coming over and they're dancing with the mom at the end in the wedding. I gotta say, it's interestingly that you brought up, Don't Look Up. the analogous movie I was thinking about throughout this entire movie, which probably hurt my opinion of it because, frankly, this is a much better movie, but was Sideways.
You know, it's the music and like the pacing of the beach setting, and
there's
like
this jazzy music, and it's about a writer. And
I thought about Sideways this whole movie, and I was just "How dare you?"
and they do it, and I think they explore. Look, obviously, the sort of the racial theme isn't there in Sideways, but some of the other things that they explore in this film are done so much better in Sideways, and kind of going for the same tone, which is like this dramatic underpinning, which, you know, Jeremy, I know you love, you don't love Sideways, but I know you love that sort of drama with comedy, but like this undercurrent of drama and human kind of condition over this sort of outrageous comedy. And like, just an example of how effective a movie, like a great movie, can be, we understand Miles' plight and we understand his money troubles and like how kind of shameful it is for him when he and sort of the dynamic with family when he goes and steals that money from his mom. It's just one little scene, but
interesting because that might be like one of the weakest scenes in Sideways.
Maybe, but
it's critical.
You get a so much better understanding of the like how money works in this family. Like they're obviously not super rich people. They struggle, you know, she lives in a kind of like a semi sort of not necessarily like a what's that called when you live in a trailer, like a trailer park, but it's like it's something similar, right?
It's like that northern LA Oxnard area where like all the houses look the same, but they're not like up in hills and like
right and you know, like that's such a profound moment in that film, and it's so subtle and not really connected to the rest of the movie. It's just there for you to understand this thing. And like American Fiction talks about all these big issues, money, how it works with family, and it's almost as if the film like took a complete 180. They just said, you know what, we're gonna make these characters the opposite of stereotypes. So the stereotypes that we see, that we discuss, that Jeffrey Wright discusses, Monk discusses with his fellow writers, like the stuff that everybody hates or that he hates in these books, we're going to make these characters the opposite. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they're writers, they're PhDs, but nobody has any money. You know, like it's just conveniently
they try to address that, but
why is that? What's interesting, but to me, this is like all the friends living in that giant apartment, like everybody, this is like, to me, this reminds, it's like Sideways meets Nancy Myers. Like they live in these beautiful places and are, you know, dressed really well and have this privilege, but none of them they still sort of struggle with money, but you know that they don't really.
But be a big deal if it wasn't like continuously a talking point in this movie. There's this awful exchange between Jeffrey Wright and Coraline, who's his girlfriend in the movie, played by Erica Alexander, when they go to see his mother in the home, and she's had like a bad episode, so they can't really talk to her. And, you know, his brother's like, how do you afford this place? And then she asks, like, how do you afford this place? And he's been like growing like continuously more frustrated and angry over his life and stuff, which is something, again, that I don't know if it's writing or performance is just not pulled off well. But he goes, and you're my girlfriend, not my bookkeeper. And I'm just like, come on. Like, this, have some subtlety in the writing. Have some nuance in, like, the themes that you're trying to address here. And if money and, like, your character's relationship with money and, like, their family's money is a theme that you want to address, then you have to put more effort into it than this stupid line of dialogue that you repeat in some form or another a bunch of times throughout the movie. And we're honing in on this, but I think it's a microcosm of the bigger picture here, which is like this story trying to, I don't know, call it satire or not, like comment on the Black experience, in particular the Black experience in literature. And it's supposed to be like, this is a character who like wants us all to think deeper and not just expect this from certain people. But they just come out and say it with these, albeit funny, but like very basic scenes with, you know, white book publishers like making all these jokes about how like white people are going to love it. And it's just not clever to me. It's not smart
writing.
They
do that scene over and over again too.
Yeah.
There is a funny moment, which I wish was explored more often, this sort of the irony aspect, because there's not a lot of that in this film, surprisingly. But, you know, the sort of 3-2 voting on making Fuck the number one book is the white people vote for it. And yeah. And it's like, we really think it's time to listen to black voices.
That was funny.
But
there's
look,
a lot
like,
of funny lines like that's, that.
But
in
there's
movie.
So, but there's so much, this is the thing. There's so much unresolved here. So for those who haven't seen it, nobody listens to these podcasts if they haven't seen it, but whatever. Issa Rae, who I think is great in this movie, gorgeous, blah, blah, blah. But she's like totally underused. She opens the film, reading from her book, and it's very kind of stereotypically written. The dialogue is very, uneducated, and I mean, almost sounds like it was written in like the slave day. Like, so it sort of sounds like, a stereotype of what a slave would talk like back in, you know, the 19th century. But, And you see Jeffrey Wright rightly reacting, you know, negatively to the way she's reading this. And so I think the sort of the first problem is, for me, who is not well versed in literature or particularly black authors specifically, but
not well versed in literature and not particularly black.
Yeah. And not particularly. But like I have not. I don't know if this is a real trend. I don't know if there's a lot of sort of quote-unquote black literature out there that is written this way. I mean, I assume there is,
because
this movie's
writing about it. But we do see the stereotypes in movies. Like, we can
sure, absolutely.
Translate it to that, for sure.
Absolutely. And then, you know, this idea, which I think is the most interesting part of the film, and seemingly what the film believes and is interested most in exploring, is Jeffrey Wright writing a book like in the sort of style and prejudice that Issa Rae's character writes her books, and it becomes this huge hit, right? So then he's asked to join this board, and in one of the most predictable turns of all time, they are asked to consider Fuck, the book he's written under the pseudonym, to be essentially, as you are saying, Lee, a satire of this material, of this kind of writing, and the three white judges love it. Jeffrey Wright, pretending that he didn't write it, says he hates it, and so does Issa Rae. What isn't resolved is why she hates it, but writes what at least he thinks is the same thing. And they get into an interesting dialogue in one scene, but I don't think they address that aspect of it. And to
me,
this is
like... They do. I think they
address it, but I don't know if they resolve it.
She defends it. I don't know if it can be resolved, really, but she basically says it's, you know, it's a real lived experience that could happen, and she felt that the other book, like, she saw it from the perspective of somebody trying to recreate.
Or take advantage of it.
And take advantage
of it.
Okay, so
that's good. She saw through the bullshit. Okay.
She saw through the bullshit of it, yeah. Also, I think this... Well... Ironically, I mean, I can't disagree with you guys. I like this movie more than you did, but I cannot disagree with anything you're saying. And I also feel like, ironically, the awards and the praise for
this
movie.
It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, is sort of the white people, the many, many scenes of the white people going, oh, I just get, like, I love it, whatever.
We need more black voices.
Yeah, we need more black voices. So I do feel like that's a little bit of what's happening, and... I also think one of the issues...
I mean, that's a sad possible truth.
Yeah, I also think one of the issues this movie has is with time. I mean, it's like the anti-Chris Nolan with time. Like, this movie doesn't make sense. Like, Chapin addressed it a little bit, but yeah, like, the sister dies, and then who knows how much time goes on, and then there's... Weirdly, the mother all of a sudden gets sick, and then he writes a whole book, and who knows how much time goes on, and his brother leaves but comes back, but then he says he never leaves, and it's like, and then the maid or the live-in house nanny or whatever. She gets married and like it. I mean, it's very bizarre. And he gets in this relationship, the serious relationship, and out of the serious relationship. But and it's not
It's not okay. Just to dig into that a little bit more, so it doesn't sound petty. Like, it's not that it's unclear, like, how much time has passed between him writing the book and this marriage. It's that all of those things that you just described are happening, right? So he goes back to the opening scene, he has to take a leave of absence from his job, so he goes back to Boston to see his family. Okay, then his sister dies. His mother has to be put in a home. He decides to write this book. He writes the whole book. It gets a publisher decides to buy it. They publish it. It becomes a bestseller. It gets optioned.
Yeah.
It gets like all of this stuff is happening in the same span of time that he's on this like jury for the literary awards to decide a thing, which presumably would happen over the course of a month.
But it also goes to your point. These are just things that are happening to make the point of the story. They're not things that are happening for any realistic, you know, storytelling reason. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. But
no, like, I totally know what you mean. Like all the revelations,
it's the bullet
about
points to try to get to the underlying themes of the film, whereas they don't make sense really within the context of the actual story that's being told.
Right.
Yeah. It there's a lot of exploration of, you know, as their mother is dying again, suddenly conveniently all this money has dried up, but as their mother is, you know, diagnosed with Alzheimer's and needs more care, there's this exploration of like his father and his father and not knowing that his father was a philanderer and, you know,
and big fucking deal. That has nothing to do with the movie.
And Sterling K. Brown wanting to know, like he said, he just out of nowhere, he just says, I wish Dad would have known I was gay and da 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 da. He would have truly known me. And then that's it. Like there's no lead up to that moment. There's nothing that falls out from that. I just feel like this movie just is a patina. They just want to be like, we need to make this we need to make this more interesting. So we're going to paint this movie with this texture of family, you know, development and time and emotions related to your family. And to me, it just doesn't work. There's not enough time or effort put towards understanding these things.
I just address that? Yeah, that scene. Like, I think devil's advocate of that. I think like a lot of this is that Monk is supposed to be very much like his father. So
yeah, which they like sprinkle in a little bit.
Yeah,
but like,
I mean, there's a few scenes like the mother calls him by his name when she's losing her, whenever she conveniently loses her mind. But also, I think that scene is like him telling his father that he's gay. But I also didn't really.
But then you also have the Alzheimer's mother say to him, "I knew you weren't a queer."
Yeah, like, I also didn't.
So why are they so mad at the dad?
Need to be gay too? I felt like that was another bullet point that they just wanted to put in to make it.
He definitely did not need to.
Like I it didn't.
It brought
it didn't
nothing
feel
to the movie.
Genuine at all.
It brought nothing to the movie. I think it was just all about trying to have these like, I don't want to use the term wild, but like bigger. Like aspects to each of the characters within that family so that you could have this reason as to why Monk like was like kind of expelled himself from it, like didn't want to be involved in it. Like he felt like, you know, he like they're all doctors and stuff like that. And they're, you know, his sister played by Tracy Ellis Ross is like very like a very big personality. And Sterling K. Brown had this family that he left because he's gay. And like, Jeffrey Wright is this thinker, right? He's like this, like he needs to get away from this and needs to like focus on what is really important, and he's going to write about it. And it's like all that outrageousness, he can't have that in his life. And I think that's what they're trying to get at here, but that's not there. You don't care enough about those relationships because all these characters are so thinly drawn. And like, I don't know. These are all like the deeper aspects of the movie, which are bigger problems. But I just had issues with like scene to scene, like what any joke or line of dialogue had to do with anything. They're sprinkling their mother, their sister's ashes, and they just have like this guy walk by being like, "You have a permit to do that?" And they're all like, "Fuck you." And I'm like, that's kind of funny. It is funny. It was, but what does that have to do with anything?
Well, I mean, it gives you context.
But none of those people have lived there for years. We learn that over and over again, but like they know this guy so well that they tell him to go fuck off.
Well,
like,
I mean, I think that's nitpicking there.
It is, but that's through the whole movie. There's scenes like that almost every single scene. There's stuff like that that is just makes that has no relevance to the movie as a whole.
Again, I hate to go back to Sideways, but I just thought of this that film so much during this, I just couldn't help it. But again, there's so much talk about this patriarchal figure, the father figure in this film, and it's all done on dialogue. And so much of this movie is tell, don't show. You know, like so much of it is communicated by dialogue. And you know, there's that scene in Sideways where you have to, you know, much like this film, you have to understand there is this influential patriarch who the main character has a strained or struggled relationship with and, you know, dies under, I mean, isn't there some sort of similar death in Sideways as well? Paul Giamatti's character or Miles, I think like,
well, in
was
his
with
book,
him when he dies, yeah. Like,
so the book that he's writing, The Day After Yesterday.
Today.
is about a guy moving back home to take care of his father after he has a stroke. And right, some of it's based on, right, he says some that. Of it's based on his real experiences.
But in that, I think in that money scene as well, he like sort of makes eye contact with that picture of Paul Giamatti with
that's right, when he's younger,
the former MLB commissioner.
Yeah,
what's his name? But his actual father. And it's such a striking moment, and it's done without dialogue, and it's weaved in so, I don't know, so elegantly. And I love the ideas in American fiction. They are just so clumsily handled and unrelated to each other that you just don't feel any sense of completion or even I don't even feel like these things were like addressed really in any sort of substantive way. And at the end of the film, like, I liked what was happening with the multiple endings, and I think particularly the one where he gets shot is particularly funny. But also, I wanted a resolution. I wanted to know how he finally felt about writing this novel that he hates, that's getting all this attention and will probably make him money. Because I think that this might be a struggle for a lot of writers, and it might not be necessarily like always a racial element.
Right.
Some people feeling like they have to write, you know, kind of beach novels instead of what they really want to talk about.
Admittedly, like a very like screenwriting 101 tool, but like the Johnny Walker thing is very appropriate. The comparison they use where he's like,
I like
this
that,
is
yeah.
Johnny Walker Red. This is Johnny Walker Black. And this is Johnny Walker Blue. Johnny Walker Blue is so good, but nobody buys it because it's too expensive and it's like too highbrow. Everybody just wants the cheap version that's easy and they can afford. And I think is exactly what you're saying. Like, it's not always necessarily about race, but you're right. Like, the resolution of this movie is him sort of like begrudgingly accepting it by like giving Adam Brody the ending he wants.
Yeah. Like, the ending didn't make any sense. It like simultaneously wanted to say, I want to leave it up to the audience while at the same time not leaving anything up to the audience.
I mean, I liked that three-part ending, in particular, like you, Chapin, that last bit. Like, and it is a very much, like, to a certain extent, wow them in the end and you have a hit. Like, because I was just like, after that, I was like, yeah, maybe I liked this movie okay. But I really did not. And I'm so fucking frustrated because there's always one like this every year that we seem to be the only white voice is saying that it's not good.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I didn't mind watching it. It's a perfectly pleasant film. But yeah, it just, it didn't blow my socks off by any means. And it had the potential. I really think the ideas, like I said here, are so fascinating. And, I mean, I'm trying to figure out the best way to put this, but I am interested in hearing about this part of Black life. And like, I am also kind of, and Jeremy, I thought of you in particular at the beginning when Monk is dealing again. We never go back to him being a teacher ever again, but,
yeah, that's true.
When he's teaching in that class and, you know, the kind of woke students.
Oh, that's because he got let go. Right.
Yeah. I like that scene.
Are upset about it. And he also feels that way. He's, you know, not only is he feeling like, I want to write about people like me, who aren't, you know, plagued with the stereotypical problems of Black America. I also like reject this, you know, student culture of not being challenged as a reader. And, we never go back to that, but, that is such an interesting area of exploration for me. And I would love to see a movie about this kind of theme and these kind of people. And maybe that's what this is. But it just felt so kind of ham-fisted in this way, like I said, about like all these talented, you know, wealthy people bucking the stereotypes who then are unable to use their wealth in any kind of, you know, meaningful way. It like, you know, there's sort of the financial struggle that we often see in many characters, Black, white, all different kind of races, all equal. Mixed with this very elite family with like four doctorates in a family of five.
I do feel like you're a little hung up on the money part of this. That's only one small aspect.
That's true. I agree.
They do try to address the money and say like the mother had to get another, you know, second mortgage or whatever she had to do.
Yeah,
and
the sister lost it.
Sister got in divorce. Like everyone, they try to at least address the issue of why they don't have any money and everyone's what I want to know is how Sterling K. Brown is a functioning plastic surgeon while he's clearly just drinking, doing coke all day.
I think that's another thing. Like, what does that add? And I agree with you because I'm not here saying like I'm like all hung up on the money thing. It's just a very easily described example of how the movie throws these things out without really thinking about how they're connected.
Yeah.
And it could be interesting to hear about like, oh, what is it like for these people to have these, you know, for people who are very rich and have a lot of degrees and have an ego when they're, you know, with both sort of decapitated by their divorces. That can also be an interesting theme to explore, but I don't know.
Yeah, but well, yeah, I mean, we kind of mentioned this, but like that is part of a problem of trying to introduce characters with things, right? Instead of giving them like depth in their personalities, because none of the supporting characters in this movie are particularly interesting and you don't really know them at all. What it tries to do to help us get to know them is give us these things like Sterling K. Brown is gay. He's a plastic surgeon. He's got he does coke. He's kind of in and out of the family. Tracy Ellis Ross got divorced. Like, it's just giving us these things, but we're not spending any significant amount of time with them. So we don't ever get to know them as characters within this family. We don't get to know the relationships that they have with their siblings and their mother. So they mean so little to us. And all of these things that you're talking about, you know, it's like that was their, it's like, oh, we need to give this character more. It's thin. Let's make him do coke. Like, that doesn't develop a character. That's just a thing. Am I making sense? Like, that's just like a convention.
Totally.
It's
not important to who the characters are. Like, it's not. Like this movie would have been just as powerful as if the siblings were not there.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
They don't add much to, Jeffrey Wright's arc, I don't think.
I mean, and that's the, you know, extended part of this issue is that this movie is kind of telling two stories. It's the story of the book that he writes and the story of his relationships with his family. And that family aspect, it's not really that interesting. Like, it's not...
Those stories also don't ever come together.
It's not heartfelt.
No,
it's not...
Don't.
Like, you don't see... Like, there are some nice moments at the beginning with Jeffrey Wright and his sister, and you think, like, okay, like, these are people that, like, you know, don't see each other a lot. Like, Jeffrey Wright has sort of, like, gotten away from his family, but, like, they kind of have, like, a little bit of a, you know, chemistry with each other. Like, they kind of seem to pick up where they left off.
I like that, yeah.
There's a little bit of that there. But then, I don't know, and it's just not. They kill off Tracy Ellis Ross's character, and then nobody else has that dynamic.
I was also wondering in that first scene why he's so opposed to his family, too, because she seems great. There doesn't seem to be any
really
animosity
I mean,
really there.
That's my theory where he's like, he needs to, like, he can't be wrapped up in, like, their go life. Like, he needs to, that's why he moved away. He, you know, he definitely has, like, this self-righteous aspect to him where, like, what he does is more important. You know, that's very clear. And I think that is supposed to kind of extend to why he stays away from his family, even though it seems like everybody's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's an interesting element that Tracy Ellen Ross talks about where he had a very close relationship with their father, but the other two didn't.
Yeah.
But he chooses to be a writer and the other two go down sort of a similar path as their father.
Right.
This is the dynamic that is in my parents or my mom's family. You know, my grandfather was a lawyer, and like my mom and a couple, you know, and her sister all were, you know, pursued law. And it's an interesting thing, but again, just raised and not explored. Some of the scenes I thought really could have been great, but were so disappointing were the scenes of Jeffrey Wright and, you know, Jose Hierro, just terribly written.
Like John Ortiz.
Yeah. And like, I like John Ortiz. He's just not, he's really not good in this movie. And like, I don't know if
he
those scenes
horrible
are
horrible material.
They're so poorly written, and they like, there's such room for comedy, and like, you know, there's this sort of slapstick element of him hitting mute and like trying to make him thug up the way he talks. And like that, just that concept is funny, but like the way they execute it is just not funny.
Yeah. I mean, also like the tonally, does it fit this movie? You know, like,
well, it has, this movie has no idea the tone.
Yeah. I got a lot of, like the whole family aspect, the tone sort of reminded me a bit of like Little Miss Sunshine, while the book part of it, I can't really put an equal on that one, but
I mean,
I don't know.
Like, separate from everything else, just watching it on its own, I really liked the scenes with Adam Brody. Like,
oh, yeah.
Especially the first one when they show up and he's like, sorry about the bougie restaurant, man. My assistant set it up. We can go someplace else. And he's like, I also did a little bit of some time myself.
Yeah, but that, like, again, that character, it's funny,
he's not very good in that. It's just, it's so...
Oh, I like him, but...
It's so sort of like one-dimensional, but...
It is. Doesn't make the movie better, but it's a funny scene on its own. I laughed at it. And that happened, you know, a handful of times.
Yeah, and as much as you guys are right, and I think you are 100% right with your takes, where I do definitely disagree with you is Jeffrey Wright. I did like him in this movie. I liked him doing something a little bit different.
Jeremy's gonna be his best actor of the year.
Jeremy, I did too, but like what, like the material is so.
But I think he elevated the material, and I kind of
agree. But
I went with
elevated
him.
It from nothing.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, but like
Jeremy
I
likes
went
having
with
his
him.
Best actors of the year be in the worst movies of the year every year. He does.
Why are you automatically going to assume?
Because it's just fun.
It is the best actor of the year.
It's just fun. It's just like the Brendan Fraser and I don't know who else.
Oh God! Don't
Austin
remind
Butler.
Me.
Those were the same year.
I know, that's true.
the which same was last misguided year. Yeah.
Was Brendan Fraser worse in The Elephant? What is that? The Whale?
The Elephant.
Bigger.
Or,
bigger.
Or Killers of the Flower Moon.
The Dolphin, the Manatee, the Sea Otter.
All right. What else have you guys watched, guys? I'd like to do a quick little minute on Beau is Afraid.
Well, don't, because I'd like to watch it.
Well, I'm not going to give anything away, but I gave Jeremy, I just finished watching it today. As you guys know, I watched half of it the other day, and I was just like, guys, you got to watch this. I have no idea if it's good or not, but it was like, I was so captured by it. It's very good filmmaking. It's very intriguing. That is the first 90 minutes. And guys, it's just like, it makes no fucking sense. I have no idea what it's about. It gets more and more ridiculous as it goes. It's like Ari Aster has got a problem with this. Like, he's very talented, but I have no idea what his goddamn movies are about. And it makes it very hard to recommend them.
I do not agree with that sentiment as it pertains to Midsommar.
Midsommar? You don't know what that movie's about either, but that's probably the best of the three. But that ending of that movie is ridiculous too. Like,
I forget what happened. Oh, she turns into a flower.
Something like that.
No.
Yeah. She's been deflowered.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting movie to watch, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know if you... I didn't change its listing on the spreadsheet because I don't know if it's any higher priority than where it is, just because it is 3 hours long, and I don't know that it's going to be a contender just because, like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I'm sure it's got something that it's trying to say, but... batshit crazy. Joaquin Phoenix is pretty good in it, though.
I will definitely watch that. That'll be on my list. Iron Claw is probably next up for me.
Yeah, that's my next.
And when does... what is it? Only Strangers? I can't remember the name of this movie.
All of Us Strangers.
All of Us Strangers. When does that come out again? Today.
Next Friday.
Great. Yeah. Great. And then most importantly, which I know our viewers care about, is the Patriots Dynasty on Apple TV comes out tomorrow.
But that's going to be next year's fixies, right?
Well, that's going to be like sort of best of the decade.
Of the century.
Century. Best movie we've seen in our lifetime.
Yeah.
God, how do I veto? Well,
it's a 10-parter.
Checks and balances do we have in place so I can prevent that from
All right. Well, that's going to do it.
Well, wait, what else have you guys been watching? Jeremy, what have you watched?
I guess that's not going to do it.
I guess it's not going to do it. Well, I didn't watch anything last night.
Nor did I. How's everybody's Valentine's?
Oh, not good. Not good.
Okay. That'd be an off-air conversation.
No, it's fine. I mean, Sarah just got really sick, and she's been in bed for 2 days.
Loving you is hard. We all understand that.
She faked it for Valentine's Day.
Good.
She's like, oh, there's only one way out of this.
Me and Lydia
violently ill.
Fingernails, which is a little bit of a love story, starring Jesse Buckley and Riz Ahmed, two Fixie nominees.
But you said
one Fixie winner. It's a skip. It's not very good.
I started watching Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. For some reason, I couldn't get into it, and I liked the first one a lot.
I mean, you got those movies are an attack on the senses.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well.
Well, what have you watched, Chapin?
I have been a little
who's
bit
behind everybody.
A little bit behind.
Remember that brief moment when you led in must-sees, and then I was like, amazing. "Fuck that."
Yeah. Then you just.
I'm way behind in that category.
I actually created a list. I sort of made a hierarchy of lists that I went back and I examined some of there's a really great resource online that documents or sort of stores like all the critics' top 10 lists year after year. So you can go and search like Sean Fennessy's top 10 of the year, or I really like the film critic from The Atlantic, David Sims. He and I tend to agree a lot. And so inevitably there's like something on there that I haven't thought of. And part of the reason why I wanted to watch Beau Is Afraid is that it was on a couple of those lists. And so, yeah, I kind of made myself my own little, like, what I need to see in the next couple weeks list.
Share that with us.
I will. Really hoping I could, like, I hate to say this, Lee, and I'm not even at all looking forward to it, but Asteroid City was on a couple of these lists.
I saw that.
Yeah, this, people just feel
it's worth seeing. It's worth seeing.
I feel like I like every other Wes Anderson movie. I'm really hoping to see The Taste of Things, which I think is just now in theaters.
I don't think we're going to get to that.
How to Blow Up a Pipeline, which was, I thought, a 2022 movie, but it's actually 2023 by our standards. The All Dirt Roads Taste of Salt, which is available on Netflix. Skip it. Boring? Yeah,
boring.
Okay.
There was a couple movies I did watch recently. Lee, what was, you've watched one of them. It was that really sarcastic or dry.
Oh, Fallen Leaves.
Yeah, Fallen Leaves. I watched that. And then I think the other one was called like Move Up. Walk Up, a Korean movie. Again, not, probably not going to get any nominations, but I kind of liked it.
Fallen Leaves was like, I don't know. That was one of the driest comedies I think I've ever seen.
Well, let's not talk about it too much. So, hey, guys, I'm curious real quick. I know we don't want to spoil too much, but I'm a little disappointed because I don't foresee there being a sort of 13 Lives upset here.
I think we're kind of torn on what it's going to be. So
I think that there's excitement from that perspective, and like I think that our opinions are very different.
Yeah, I was going to say I think there could be like some very highly ranked movies on some lists or one list that might not even be in the top 10 on another. I think we could have a couple like that this year. Which would be interesting. But I agree. I don't think there's going to be that like dark horse, nobody's number one winner. Although, I don't know. It's tough to say. But we'll find out in just 23 short days.
Okay. Well, we got a lot of work to do before then. Jeremy, you got to secure equipment. Lee, I think you're on the private chef.
I'm good.
I gotta fly out there. So I've done my part.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I found the housing, which is good.
Good hard work there.
So we all got our work cut out. What do the next 23 days look like for you? I mean, I gotta start working on my list.
Okay.
All right, well,
that'll do it. Thank you for listening. If you feel so inclined, let us know your favorite movies of 2023. You can email us at getyourfilmfixpodcast@gmail.com. Be curious if there's anything that you feel like we've missed and that we need to check out. Don't waste our time with some shit. All right, if you're going to send us shit, don't bother emailing us. Better, it has to be good. It has to be a good movie. Am I out of line here?
What would it be? Like, what would be a bad answer? Barbie?
No, it has to, if you're going to send us something, make sure that it's got an 80 or higher Metacritic score, okay? somehow we don't already have on the list. It's got to be less than 150 minutes. Okay? Preferably from an auteur. Okay? That's all we're asking. All right, that's it. Thank you for listening.
Excuse me. Ned, do you have any books by the writer Thelonious Ellison?
Yeah, this way.
Here you go.
Right.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Why are these books here?
I'm not sure. I would imagine that this author, Ellison, is black.
That's me.
Ellison.
Yeah.
He is me, and he and I are black.
Oh, bingo.
No bingo, Ned. These books have nothing to do with African-American studies. They're just literature. The blackest thing about this one is the ink.
I don't decide what sections the books go in, and no one here does. That's how chain stores work.
Right. Ned, you don't make the rules.
I'm just gonna put them back after you leave.
Don't you dare, Ned. Do not you dare.